I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica. And this is All Things Sensory by Harkla.
We are both certified occupational therapy assistants, and together with Harkla, we are on a mission to empower parents, therapists, and educators to help raise confident and strong children of all abilities.
On this podcast, we chat about all things sensory, diving into special needs, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, overall health and wellness, and so much more.
We are here to provide raw, honest, and fun strategies, ideas, and information for parents, therapists, and educators, as well as other professionals to implement into daily life.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to All Things Sensory by Harkla. We're happy you're here. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica. And we have such an incredible conversation for you to listen to today. We got to talk to Kristen. She's an OT. And she runs a nature-based clinic. Oh,
so cool.
And we talk about using nature in a therapeutic way. We talk about mindfulness and co-regulation and probably so many other things that
all
I can't
of our
even remember.
Questions that we had for her that came
so
up.
So many amazing things for you to listen to and watch today.
Yes. All right. Let's jump in. Let's get to it. Hi, Kristen. How are you today?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing good.
Yes. Yeah. So we are going to talk to you about some really great things today. But first, we need to ask you five secret questions so that our audience knows your deepest, darkest secrets.
Ooh.
Ooh, yes. Okay, number one, what is your least favorite food, but a food that you know you should eat?
Probably lima beans. It's really the only food that I don't really like.
Lima beans? Oh. Are they the green ones? Are they green?
Yeah.
Yeah. They come in like the – yeah, like the veggie mix. Like if you buy a frozen veggie mix, they come in there. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You know, I don't really like those either.
Kind of weird texture.
Yeah, kind of like mushy texture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's fair.
Okay.
If you were reincarnated as an animal, what would you be?
I think a dolphin. I love dolphins.
Oh, ooh.
Dolphins are really smart.
I love dolphins.
That's the first thing I think of.
If you could be a professional in any sport, which sport would it be?
Lacrosse. I've actually played college lacrosse.
So. Oh, okay. So you're basically a professional.
Yeah, I'm old.
You were a professional.
At one point, I had my day.
Is lacrosse one of the sports that they get kind of – you get kind of like violent almost, like you push people around? Or am I thinking of something else?
Women's lacrosse, you can't body check. Oh. You can stick check.
Oh, okay.
Men's lacrosse is basically football with sticks. You can body check and, it's rough.
I like it.
Oh, okay.
I feel like I would have liked lacrosse if it was available when I was a kid. Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's not as big where you guys are. Mm-mm. It's getting there. It's getting there.
It's growing for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, is it my turn?
Yeah.
Oh. What is your favorite way to de-stress?
Getting outside.
Love that.
That makes sense with what we're going to talk about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, just anything outside.
Yep.
All right. Last question and our most favorite question of all. What is your sensory quirk?
I am a mover. I seek out all, and I mean, you'll notice in this, I move around a lot. I've always been a big sensory seeker of vestibular input, always.
Okay.
Do you have a swing in your house at all?
We actually, believe it or not, we do not have any swings in the house. We have a newer house, and we didn't want to put any hooks in the ceilings, but we have all kinds of swings outside. Mm-hmm. Hammocks, and we have just disc swings and big platform swings and all kinds of swings.
I love it.
There it is.
I love it. Okay, so now that we all know your deepest, darkest secrets, tell us what you do, why you do it, who you are, all the things.
So I'm Kristen Palin, and I have been an OT now for 19 years. So it's it's been a while now. And I'm also a homeschool mom. So I've been homeschooling my kids They're 10-4 from the start, which wasn't really something that we had planned on doing, but we're kind of still doing it and we enjoy it and it's working for us. And I also have my own nature-based private practice where I do direct therapy. And I also do direct individual therapy, all nature-based outdoors. I do actually have an EI contract because I have both my kids are preemies and I just have a special spot for preemies. So I always hold on to that, but I really try to do my EI stuff outside as well. And I also have a virtual side to my business where I do some parent coaching. I'm in the process of making some online resources for parents.
So many things.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I have a question, a personal question. Sure. Did your children receive any outside services at, like, they were preemies, so did you do any OT or PT, anything like that with them?
Yeah, so my son was a 30-weeker and my daughter was 36. So my daughter didn't need anything, but my son did. My son had PT, and at the time it was one of my amazing coworkers. She was incredible. He had her, and then he had speech therapy for a long time. He'd never had OT other than me. If I had been near some of my really, really good friends, they would have been his OT, but we just didn't really, there wasn't really anybody. And I don't have anyone else who works for me. So it was just me.
Oh, wow. 30 weeks and 36 weeks. Man, we could have like a whole nother conversation. Pick your brain about that.
Oh, yeah. I could talk a lot about preemies.
Okay. Let's chat about how you got started in the area of mindfulness and regulation. I know that's a big part of your practice and what you do, so we'll start there.
Yeah, so I've always been interested in mindfulness. You know, I was a college lacrosse player, and I always was into visualization and mindfulness and meditation. Like, that was part of my pregame warm-up. We had a sports psychologist who used to do a lot of those things with us. And it was always just a big interest in mine. And then being an OT student, I think I just was like, oh, I can incorporate, like, this is so important to incorporate, you know, with the kids who I'm working with. And I always knew I wanted to work with kids. And most of my volunteer work in college was all with children. And one of my really cool field works where I just kind of added on to it when my level one field worked was at a school for children with brain injuries. And the teacher was, she was very into yoga. And, you know, this was early on. You know, this was, I graduated 20 years ago. So this was early on. Yoga wasn't as big. And she was doing that with a lot of the children in her class had seizure disorders and, you know, very sensory sensitive children. And so she was doing it. I was like, oh, look at, like, I just thought that it was the coolest thing. And later on, so then when I became an OT, and one of my first jobs was at a sensory clinic, and the owner of the clinic also happened to be, she was also a certified yoga instructor. And she then was going into the training to be a certified yoga therapist, which I believe the program that she was in was one of the first in the country at the time. And she actually used me for her thesis because I had an old college lacrosse shoulder injury. And so I got to see kind of the whole process because she was working on me. And so it was really, really a cool experience because I got to experience, you know, what she would do with somebody, you know, firsthand. So then I really got to learn from her, and she did a lot of yoga groups, and she incorporated a lot of meditation. And so, Jenna was her name, and, she was just incredible. And so she was really a big mentor of mine. And I feel like she just kind of like spearheaded everything for me in that direction, because so many of the children, you know, we were at a sensory clinic. So, you know, so many of the children were struggling with self-regulation, and this was kind of just a piece that was just so grounding to them. And, you know, it doesn't always have to be, you know, we'll get into it, but, you know, I think so many times everyone thinks that, you know, mindfulness has to be just about breathing and sitting still. And yes, it's so much more than that and doesn't have to be that. And I think she really kind of helped to show me how dynamic it can be and how much we already incorporate it into OT when we don't even realize it. But I think she kind of really helped to broaden my perspective of it and how beneficial it would be to all the children who we work with.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
And so then the clinic that you own now, you said is an outdoor clinic. What did you, Nature-based outdoor
therapy clinic.
Yeah. And so we'll come back to the mindfulness in just a second to tie it into all in together. But what does that mean to have like a nature-based clinic?
So all pretty much all my therapy services I do outside. And I either do them on the at the park. Some of my clients have really cool backyards, so we just do it in their backyard. And so basically nature is my therapy tool. So just as, you know, anyone would do therapy, you know, inside, I'm just doing it outdoors and I'm using a lot of natural materials and what we find in nature for my therapy. So, you know, instead of climbing on a rock wall or a ladder, we're climbing a tree, or instead of balancing on a balance beam, we're balancing on a log, or, you know, we're tying ropes into a tree and swinging from there. And I do still use lots of swings that I hang up outside. And I definitely don't use as many, you know, a lot of my games from when I had a clinic are all in the attic. I really don't use them as much anymore. It's funny, occasionally when I have to have an inside session, when we have like a bad storm or something, it's like, oh, I actually have to like think of ideas again, because I'm so used to just using what we find outside and getting creative with what we can find. And so yeah, so that's, I nature is really my
it's big like therapy your tool treatment modality. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could you give us a quick run through of like what a session might look like if you were working with maybe like a 6-year-old with sensory processing challenges? Like what would a session look like?
Yeah. So we usually will start out, you know, with some warm up activities, just kind of, we would, if we were inside. And a lot of times, you know, if we'll do some proprioceptive and some vestibular input. So we might be swinging from a rope swing, or we might be climbing up a tree, or we might be building a fort with some sticks or some logs that we found to get that heavy work. We might be, I love making nature obstacle courses. So we'll use whatever we find to create our obstacle courses. So we might use a big log for a balance beam, or we might make a little ladder out of some sticks, or rake up some leaves. And instead of jumping and crashing into pillows, we're jumping and crashing into leaves. Or hills are always so much fun because we can climb up hills, we can roll down hills, we can slide down hills on cardboard, you know, we can crawl down hills on our bellies, all different ways of just kind of getting creative with how we can use our bodies more, so, and not so much using equipment.
And so when you're talking about nature, I'm envisioning like a forest for whatever reason. I'm just envisioning these kids doing therapy in like the forest, and there's like a stream and it's just really naturey. But you did say, you know, going to the park. So would you use like playground equipment as part of, you know, their session?
Sometimes I do. It's funny because there's one park that I go to, and the playground, it's an amazing playground, and we actually use the trees more than the playground. And what I find is that, you know, the kids will gravitate more towards those things, because especially a child who has motor planning challenges, and, you know, there's not just one way that you have to do it. Like, they can figure out different ways to kind of navigate their body if they have those challenges with coordinating their movements. It offers more open-endedness and more flexibility. So it's not just they have to do it one way and, or it's not going to be able to work. So but I do use playground equipment as well. You know, we have some pretty cool playgrounds where we are, with some cool slides that we can climb up. And sometimes I'll hang swings onto bars that are lower that I can reach. And, but most of the time, I'm really just using nature. And we're by the beach. So we have a lot of cool trails, like in the sand dunes, that we can use. And we have some really big sand dunes here. And so it's a neat area to be able to do it.
I'm curious what your documentation looks like. Are you treating privately? So are most people paying private pay? So maybe documentation isn't quite as specific. What does documentation look like for a nature-based, what would you call yourself, a nature-based OT?
Yeah, I do. You know, it's something that sometimes I say outdoor or nature-based, but I really am using nature. Like, yeah. I use all natural materials. It's rare for me to pull out like a game or a toy unless the child really wants it. Like, unless, mm-hmm. and what I find is they don't want it. Like, they would rather choose to play with mud and dirt and sticks, rather than, you know, the typical toys.
Yes.
But yeah, for documentation, I actually do take insurance.
Okay.
So I do my, you know, my evaluation, just how I typically would with standardized tests. I don't use too many standardized tests, but I do use some, cause I take Medicaid, so I have to use some. But I, you know, I write up my goals. My goals are, you know, they're very, very functional. I will make some outdoor goals, especially, you know, a lot of the people who are reaching out and seeing me are reaching out in particular because their child loves to be outdoors and they thrive outdoors. And so a lot of the goals that I'm making are, they might be outdoor based goals, you know, to climb on uneven surfaces and, you know, to balance on uneven surfaces, or to, you know, climb up an incline, or to different goals to climb a tree. Cause a lot of times they want to be able to climb a tree, but they, you know, they don't have that motor planning or that motor control to be able to do it. So, I do make goals like that. I also have just regular, you know, functional goals. But my documentation, you know, I can always relate it back to function. I can relate everything back to function. And, so I haven't had any, problems yet at all with insurance.
Could you just give us an example of like a goal, just a very generic goal that you have that you, you know, use the nature and the outdoors, and but you do it from a functional standpoint and you have to write your goal in that functional way. Just one example.
Yeah. So I might say something like, I just wrote one last night. So this one child really wants to be able to climb trees, and you know, has a lot of vestibular processing challenges, very cautious. And so I wrote a goal how, you know, Sally will climb up a tree and find three different ways to climb up and three different ways to climb down, demonstrating adequate motor planning and motor control. So something like that. So, you know, that's a typical goal that I'll have if a child has, you know, some motor planning challenges, and that's something that they want to work on. You know, I have other lots of fine motor goals, you know, just a typical fine motor goal to be able to isolate, you know, a pincer grasp pattern when picking up small objects, when creating, you know, nature process art or something like that. Things like that. So sometimes I have goals for knot tying, you know, bilateral coordination goals for tying knots when, you know, I can relate it back to wilderness. Sometimes I'll say like for wilderness training or wilderness safety, and I'm able to do it that way. So, I mean, I still do write, you know, I'll still write handwriting goals, and I still write, you know, scissor goals for kids who need help with cutting. And I make lots of goals. I do have a lot of goals that I'll make, for self-regulation, like to identify, you know, three strategies out in nature that are calming and regulating, or three strategies that are alerting, or, you know, what co-regulating strategies can we identify in nature that the parents can then carry over at home. So I make a lot of goals like that too.
I do want to jump into like the self-regulation and co-regulation, but I have one more question.
Wait,
first.
I have one too.
Have one too. Yes. Okay, so two more questions first. Sorry. What about if you have a kiddo who comes in who needs help with self-dressing skills, how can you use that nature-based therapy to address those dressing skills?
Yeah, so we would just play dress up outside.
Okay.
You know, I mean,
so simple.
It's like, oh yeah,
let duh.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many opportunities where we can get clothes and we can pretend to be animals. I do so much pretend play and storytelling in my session. So we might put on an old, you know, an old jacket. That's their bear fur. And then they're going to be bears, and we're going to build a bear den, and we're going to go hunt and find some berries to eat. And so different things like that, so you know, and there's so many opportunities where they're constantly taking off their jackets. They're taking off layers of clothes. They're taking off shoes and socks because so many of them love to be barefoot. So there's a lot of opportunities for that.
Amazing. Okay, now your turn. My thought was, how would you adapt your session for a child with mobility challenges if they were in a wheelchair? I mean, how would you do that?
Yeah, so I think, you know, I do, like I said, sometimes I can do it. I can do it in a park. I can do it anywhere. I can do therapy anywhere. So, you know, if we're in a park somewhere, you know, we can find a bench to practice transfers on. Or, you know, if we're in their backyard, you know, we can – we can find chairs that they're using. We can find, I mean, actually, like, that's actually a great way to do it, because so many times those children don't have the opportunities to get on the ground and play. So we can practice those transfers from the wheelchair to the ground and from the ground and back up, and navigating the wheelchair over different surfaces. And if they have like an all-terrain wheelchair with bigger wheels, we can practice navigating it over, you know, different surfaces and things like that. So actually, I think that's I tend to not see as many children with physical disabilities, because most of the people who are seeking me out seek me out for sensory processing reasons. But I have, and I think it's a great environment for them to be in, because a lot of times their opportunities in those environments are really limited.
Mm-hmm. My brain is just exploding with all of these ideas of like all of the kids that I've seen in the past, and like how I would have incorporated, you know, an outdoor session. And I'm just like, man, this kid and this kid and this kid would have loved playing outdoors for their OT session. Like, I love it.
Well, I take my little guy, he's a year and a half. I take him to like nature school once a week. Oh, cool. And it's like a big OT session for me. I'm like, oh, this is so fun. Yeah. We're making mud pies and we're throwing rocks in the river and we're balancing. And it's like super fun. And so that's what I'm thinking about while you're explaining all this. And I love it. I'm like, let's do this more often.
With every kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, and I think what really gave me the pull to really do this was that I really felt like I was having, you know, and there's definitely pros and cons, you know, to being in a clinic versus not being in a clinic. You know, I don't have all of my swings. I don't have all of the equipment that I need. So I really have to get creative with how I use things. And I do pull things in, you know, I bring balls and, you know, I'll bring BOSUs and I will bring balance boards and things like that too, or we'll make a balance board with a piece of wood and a log. And, so I do bring in some things, sometimes, but I think so many of the kids who I was seeing, you know, they were kind of, I felt like there was some kind of missing piece that I couldn't address, because so many times, you know, the parents would say, well, they do this great with you in here, but then, you know, he goes to the playground with his friends and he's afraid to do anything. So he just sits back and watches. And, or, you know, like, yeah, like they'll play with you here, but then when we go outside, they don't want to get their hands messy or dirty. So they just sit back. They don't want to play in the sand. And so I feel like I can really address those issues in such a functional way that I couldn't before.
Okay. Totally. One more question. I just keep coming up with more. If you're doing a session with a kiddo at like the park and there's other kids there, do you engage those other kids for some social communication work, some social emotional skill development?
I haven't so much. A lot of the places I go are more isolated, and I kind of pick them on purpose for that reason. So there's not as many distractions. So yeah. I haven't as much yet. But I think if the opportunity was there, I definitely would. And if it was a goal that we were working on with a child, you know, I absolutely would. I've incorporated siblings and friends before in sessions. But yeah, not so much. I do plan on doing some on nature groups probably in the fall, to pull in the socialization piece.
That'd be really cool. Yeah.
Okay. Are we ready?
I think we're ready to talk about
it. So let's chat about, you talked a little bit about this earlier, but let's talk about using nature for self-regulation.
Yeah. So, you know, nature, I always talk to so many people, like, you know, think about when you're inside and you've been inside, especially if you've been inside for a couple hours, and, you know, especially if you're with kids and things are getting loud and kids are getting touchy and feely, and you step outside and you're like, huh, I feel relaxed now, you know, and there's a reason for that. You know, that naturally nature is just so calming and regulating, you know, innately it is, like the sensory stimuli that is found in nature is so much gentler than what is found inside. You know, there's no walls to make those loud echoes. You know, there's not bright for less fluorescent lights. And, you know, we have all of the birds chirping and the wildlife that draws our attention out, outward, which, you know, especially for the kids who are all built up so much inside, because of all of the sensory sensitivities that they have and because of everything that they're holding together inside, I feel like finally when you can get outside, it's like a release. And you know, there's so many studies that have proven that show the benefits of nature for self-regulation. You know, it decreases anxiety, it decreases depression. You know, for children with ADHD, it's been proven to assist with focus and even their creative thinking. So there's so many studies out there that show the benefits of nature. It's just naturally a co-regulator for everybody, really.
I know it is for me.
Oh, for sure.
It's like my go-to. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What does that really mean, mindfulness? Because I think you talked about, you know, it's not just sitting and thinking about your thoughts or sitting and deep breathing. Like, it's so much more than that.
Yeah. So mindfulness is just bringing and focusing your attention to the internal and external experiences in the present moment that you're in. So it's drawing your attention towards something. So it isn't always about, you know, it isn't always about being still. It's just focusing your attention onto something. So naturally, you know, in OT sessions, there's so often that, you know, OTs do this naturally and don't even know it. You know, when we might be having a child on the swing and we might be saying, okay, like, let's see, can you move your body faster from side to side? Can you slow down your body? Oh, how did you do that with your body? You know, what did you do to make your body stop? So like that right there is mindfulness thinking. They're attuning to their body. So they're attuning to those internal sensations of their body to feel how they are, you know, and that would be an example of like an internal one. And then for like an external one, you know, it could just be, you know, it could just be attuning to a tree that you see outside and how are the leaves blowing in the wind? Which direction are they blowing? You know, are they blowing fast? Are they blowing slow? So it's like, you know, is that a tall tree? How would you feel if you climbed up to that tall tree? So it's just drawing your attention, externally and internally towards something. And, you know, it can involve movement. It doesn't have to be sitting still. It can be dynamic.
And I'm just thinking that probably would be so beneficial for kiddos who have like ADHD and anxiety, who their brains are going 100 miles a minute and we just need them to like slow down.
Yes, exactly. And those are really the majority.
I'm even thinking about the kiddos, the sensory kiddos who you're talking about how this texture makes them feel or how the light mm-hmm. makes them feel. Yeah, and you're connecting that sensory stimuli to a feeling or to an emotion and mm-hmm. then almost like working through how to have an adaptive response and what can you do to have that more appropriate adaptive response? What strategies can we use if the texture is making you feel uncomfortable?
Right.
And so drawing that attention towards that. Yeah, that's, I mean, that is, we do it almost second nature, but
you do, yeah.
But almost taking it a step further and yeah. focusing on that, having that mindfulness tactic in the back of your mind, like, this is why I'm working on, this is why we're having the conversation, and teaching mm-hmm. the children, if possible, how to do that on their own in different environments as well.
Yeah. And I think the really big thing is too, is that so many of the, you know, so many of our children with sensory processing differences, you know, they're holding so much together inside. And so if we can just draw them outwards a little bit to, you know, focus on something else, then, you know, especially if they're outside in nature, you know, and I always say that by connecting more with nature, you know, innately that we're then connecting more with ourselves, because then we can focus our attention outward, which then we can be relaxed to then focus more on ourselves. And that's where that self-regulation piece comes in.
Yeah. Love that. So let's talk about strategies for caregivers to understand and successfully learn co-regulation. We've talked about co-regulation in our podcast before. We love co-regulation. So how can we teach a child's caregiver or caregivers to successfully co-regulate?
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing that I always tell parents with co-regulating is really, first of all, to focus on the self-regulation piece of regulating yourself first as the parent. So everything that we would do with the children, I work through with the parents. So I'll have the parents figure out what their sensory preferences are, figure out what their sensory sensitivities are, So then they know what is triggering them, because so often, you know, if you have a child who has emotional regulation challenges, you're going to be triggered a lot. You know, your own emotions as the parent are going to be triggered, because, you know, your child is often in a fight or flight or freeze reaction, which then makes you be in that reaction. So focusing first on regulating ourselves as parents is just so vital, and using sensory strategies for ourselves is so important. And I think that's something that we can really do a lot as OTs, is to really teach parents how to do that for themselves. Because I think so much we're focused on the child, which, you know, we need to be, but I think that missing piece is really supporting the parent, so that they can be regulated, which I think is really important.
Oh, totally. I use these strategies with Daniel.
With your husband?
Yes. He's like, you sound like you're talking to a client. I'm like, well, I am, you know, like I have to help him make a good choice. And we talk about, you know, there's no possible way to help a toddler regulate. Like, we're in the toddler phase right now. There's no way to help a toddler regulate their emotions when you can't regulate your own. I'm not saying he doesn't regulate his own, but I'm like, you know, let's take a deep breath together, and we'll like teach our toddler how to do these things by modeling. Yeah. And it's one of those things that doesn't come natural to people. We have to learn these coping strategies.
Yeah. That's because our kids just bring it all out of us.
That's true. They do. Yeah. And I think, you know, once we can teach parents that piece, then I always tell parents, you know, think about how you can use yourself as a sensory tool. You know, obviously, you know, there's all kinds of amazing equipment out there, and as OTs, we love all the sensory equipment out there. But, you know, I think so much of what our kids are seeking is that connection with us. So how can you use yourself as a sensory tool? How can you adjust your voice? You know, does it help if you begin to talk in a whisper? Does it help if sometimes, you know, a sing-song voice will help some children? You know, how can you modulate your voice to help your child? How can you control your level of touch with your child? Does your child want to be close to you? Do they want to be touching you? Do they want deep pressure from you? Or do they want more space from you? You know, it's also, how can you use your body language? Is it helpful if you have very close proximity and you're down at their level on the floor? Or some children might not want that, you know, so and it's really just attuning to your child, you know, being a sensory detective and just observing them to see what's going to work. You know, so much of it is just experimenting with what is going to work and how they're best going to respond. And I think using yourself as a sensory tool is really one of the biggest tools that we have as parents, because that's all kids want. They just want us. And so, you know, how can we adjust ourselves to be their regulator, which is, you know, no pressure there for parents or anything.
No, it's so funny because I've done this very recently with my son, who's 8. And there's been several times just in the past couple of months where he's gotten very upset and we're sitting there talking, and I literally like will literally just sit on the floor and he'll sit in my lap and I'll just like have my arms kind of around him and he'll like kind of rock a little bit, not like extreme. I mean, he's literally just like sitting in my lap and he's kind of crying, and we're just like, okay, we're gonna relax for a minute.
Here. Yeah. And be present.
Yeah.
And connect.
And I have to like really control my breathing to make sure like my breathing's not getting escalated, because I know that like I need to be more calm so that when he's sitting there with me, he can kind of feel that calm energy.
Exactly.
And it's really hard, but it really does work. Yeah. It works.
Yeah, it takes practice, you know, and I talk a lot about holding the space, you know, it's like you're in this big security bubble with your child. And it's like, you know, it's like you have this space between you, and what can you do to hold that space for them so that they feel secure, you know, because that's such a big part of this, is that level of attachment and that sense of security, so that they can then feel confident to then be able to learn these strategies themselves.
Yeah. I'm thinking of my example using, it was my husband. He was using his own body to provide proprioception to our little boy. And Trip wanted him to lean back, and he was sitting on the floor playing. They were doing flips and playing. you know, going upside down and whatnot. And Trip was pushing on his chest while he was sitting down, and he was saying, lean back, and just getting heavy work, just getting those joint compressions just by pushing on him. And then eventually Daniel laid back, and then he crawl on him, and just like repeating that sequence of the vestibular input followed by that proprioceptive input. He didn't know he was doing that, but secretly I was like, yes, way to go. Maybe he did know. I don't know.
But no, exactly what you said. I think, you know, as parents, a lot of, you know, we do this naturally, you know, even if, you know, if we weren't OTs, you know, especially think about an infant, you know, we're rocking, we're holding, we're patting, you know, so so many of our older kids need that too, just in a different way. And so it's just figuring out what they need and how you can provide that for them.
Love it. Oh, so many things.
I know. I'm so like, many this things. Is so good.
I know. Okay, I want to know more about Waldorf. What is Waldorf? Tell us about it. What is it? How do you do it?
Side note, we do have a Waldorf school here in Boise.
See? I need to know about it.
That's cool. Yeah, you got there's so many out there on the West Coast. The closest one to here is like, I think, 4 hours away. So, yeah, we don't have one anywhere near, which is part of the reason why we homeschool. So, yeah, so Waldorf is it ties in so well to OT. And you know, when we first began homeschooling, you know, I was just naturally kind of creating, I didn't know the word at the time, I used the word like a flow to our day. But so much of Waldorf is everything is created around rhythm, around repeated rhythm and predictability, and everything around there is around that rhythm. And you know, what is like that rhythm of your day, that routine of your day. And it's a whole child developmental approach to learning. So it's, you know, it's a learning philosophy, and it's bringing developmental learning experiences at the developmentally appropriate time. So you will see the academic skills brought in later. You know, children don't really begin reading and writing and those general academic skills until first grade. And usually in Waldorf, you're either 7 or you're very close to 7 in first grade. So there's 2 years of kindergarten. So it's a little bit different. But so much of it, it's about, you know, teaching the development of appropriate material through the use of the arts. So when you hear Waldorf, you'll hear the head, heart, and hands. And, you know, I think of OT, and we think about like we're treating a mind, body, and, you know, soul, and it's so similar. And so like the head portion would be, you know, the thinking part, that's the more the academic piece. And so much of Waldorf is brought through stories and through imagination and through experiential learning, and really using stories is a very, very big part of it at all ages, to help children to really create those images and those visions in their head. And I use a lot of stories because of that in my OT practice. I think it's just such a great way to reach kids that you normally couldn't reach them through a story, like through topics that they may not want to approach, but you can approach it through a story. And it's so much more, I think it really creates that sense of security for them and that comfort for them. You know, and it's like this gift of a story that you're giving them. And I mean, and kids just, they love it. They love it. If I tell a story in a session, I'll usually get asked to tell a story over and over and over again, that same story. So it's pretty special. So the heart is more of, you know, that's more of that. That's where I bring in the self-regulation piece. But the heart is really connecting physically and emotionally to oneself and, you know, to your environment. So Waldorf is very much nature-based, and we use all natural materials are used. You know, there's a lot of wood, a lot of wool, beeswax, clay. Trying to think what else we use, you know, cotton, you know, it's a lot of process art, and a lot of purposeful art, you know, everything is multi-sensory experience, you know, a lot of kinesthetic learning through moving our body, so much movement in Waldorf, you know, everything is learning through movement. So if you're learning the times tables in math, you're marching out, or you might be clapping out the times tables, or you might be tossing bean bags, or you might be walking on a balance beam. So, you know, as an OT, this is like, to me, this was like perfect fit for my kids who have a lot of sensory needs, you know, so this kind of was able to meet all of their sensory needs. And then the last piece is the hands. And this is, you know, another OT piece where, you know, it's very much project-based to make purposeful things that you're going to make. You know, it's not, you won't really see any cutting and pasting and making crafts in that way, but you'll see kids knitting, you'll see kids doing woodworking, you'll see kids making projects with felting and sewing and gardening and modeling with clay. And there's a lot of painting, a lot of drawing. There's no books at all involved in it. Children make their own lesson books. So there's no textbooks at all involved, because everything's brought through stories and through that way of teaching. So it's really such an experiential learning piece, and I've brought a lot of it into my OT practice.
So yeah, it's been pretty fun. You use like a Waldorf? Is it a curriculum? Would you say like a Waldorf curriculum? Is that what you use to homeschool your kids?
Yeah. So what's interesting about Waldorf is that there really aren't any curriculum. So like if you go to a Waldorf school, every Waldorf school is going to be different because that teacher is creating their own curriculum for their own class. And so there's more of a framework to follow, which, you know, as OTs, we kind of like too.
Yeah. Like, that's what we want to do.
Yeah, that's fitting.
Yeah. So it's not so structured. It's really about teaching the child in front of you. So, you know, I have like a framework that I follow. I have used some pieces of curriculum, but I didn't really follow them at all. So I tend to create my own, which is pretty typical in Waldorf. There are some homeschool curriculums out there for Waldorf, though, that are wonderful resources for families.
Okay.
Yeah.
Side note, how do you balance homeschooling two kiddos and working, owning your own businesses, doing all the things? I mean, how does that flow together?
Yeah, that's a work in progress. So fortunately, my daughter's only four. So, you know, her school is she's playing. And in Waldorf, you know, school doesn't really start until about five. And that's kind of their first year of kindergarten. And it's still all play-based. So for her, you know, I obviously do things with her, but I don't have to worry about the academic portion for her really. And honestly, she just does so much on her own. I mean, like today, I don't know, she was writing her name and drawing, and she picked up a lot of stuff just from watching my son. And then, you know, a lot, I keep things very, very simple. And I always stress that to parents, you know, when you're homeschooling, you don't have to, you're not doing 8 hours of school a day. We can usually do everything in about 2 hours. So it's simplified, and we can spread things out throughout the day, which makes things a lot easier. And I don't see that many clients. I see however many I can, and, you know, I wish I could see more, but right now I can't. So someday I'll be able to see more.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That works out. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I love it. I love this topic.
Okay. I just like, I'm thinking of all the outdoor stuff
still. I know.
I just love that you have a nature-based therapy clinic. Like, I want to do that.
I know.
Like,
how did you get started? Like, how did you, what, let's go down like a business road. How did you get started creating your nature-based OT practice?
So
tell us your secret.
I worked, the first half of my career was in a clinic. And then we moved, and I was doing early intervention, and where I was in Pennsylvania, and this would have been 2011. And that's when you couldn't, in Pennsylvania, they were a little bit ahead of some of the other states. You couldn't bring a bag or anything into a home, nothing. And so for me, who had been clinic-based for 10 years, you know, having every piece of equipment I could possibly want. To go into a home with nothing was a challenge. I was like, oh my gosh, what do I do? Like, with, I don't have my swings. Like, what do I do without a swing? And so I started getting outside more because, you know, that offered more opportunities for movements rather than being inside. And so we would, you know, it was a more rural area. So there was a lot of cool places. A lot of people had, I mean, I had people who had like rivers flowing through their front yards, and there was some pretty cool landscapes that we could navigate outside. And so that's kind of how I started it. And then we moved again after that. And then I was doing home-based. I was doing some EI and then also just home-based services. So I was at home. So again, I took advantage of the outdoors. And then when I came, and I knew that I always loved nature. I've always loved nature, you know, ever since I was a little kid. And so I always thought, how cool would it be if I could just have, you know, do my therapy outside. And then, so we finally, you know, I had the opportunity, we moved into a new area and I had an opportunity to do it. So it started up.
That's perfect. What would you say is the biggest challenge with what you do?
I think just not having enough time, you know?
Yep.
You know, so many of my sessions are child, you know, they're child led. And so I wish I could do 2 hour sessions. You know, I take insurance, so I can't do that. And I really could, like, I feel like so much of how I do therapy, you know, it's so child led. So we're out, we're exploring, and, you know, the next thing I know, like, that time is up. And like, even, you know, some of the kids are like, oh, just stay. Can you stay a little bit longer? And
your heart is like breaking.
And they don't want it to end either. And, you know, and some of my sessions usually run over because of that, because how can I not like keep going? I wish I could do like hour and a half, 2 hour sessions. Like, that would just, I wish insurance would allow that. That would be
so that beneficial. Would be really ideal. Someday.
Yeah.
Shout out to all the insurance companies. Let's go.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So what is next for you professionally? What are you working on? Give us all the details. Even if it's nothing, that's okay too. Yeah, you have a lot on your plate.
I'm always working on something. So I've actually been looking into getting a nature therapy certification. So learning more about forest bathing and my horticulture therapy and incorporating more of that into my practice. I would love to kind of learn more about that. So I've been kind of looking into that. I would love to get a yoga certification at some point when I have the time to be able to do that.
It's like 200 hours, right?
It is. I know. And that's why I've looked at so many. I am doing a meditation certification right now, which is only 100 hours. So
only.
But that one wasn't quite as bad. So I am doing that right now. And I think business-wise, you know, I really want to try to create more resources. I created a couple online resources, kind of a Waldorf mindfulness movement resources, but I would love to be able to do some more. Excuse me.
Definitely.
But I have some master classes that I'm trying to line up, that I'm trying to finish creating.
Yes. So where can all of our listeners find all of these resources that you have out already and that you'll be putting out very soon, I'm sure?
And where are you located so people can potentially seek out in-person therapy?
Yeah, so I am in, So I am in the Outer Banks of North Carolina. So right by the beach. It's a beautiful spot to be. So my website is coastalconnectionsot.com. And then they can find me on Instagram. It's coastalconnectionsot. And then I do have a Facebook page. That's Coastal Connections Pediatric Therapy that I need to put more time into.
Don't we
finishing
all?
Up that I haven't finished up yet.
Dang Facebook.
I know.
Perfect. And we'll link all of that in the show notes and description so people can just click it to see you.
Okay. Can you leave our listeners and our viewers with one piece of advice? You've given us so much already, but if you have one last piece of advice to leave us with, that'd be great.
I think it's just really to keep things simple. You know, as parents, I think so often we're trying to find the perfect activity, you know, especially, you know, I have a neurodivergent child. I know what it's like. So, you know, you're trying to find the perfect activity that's going to just motivate them and make them excited, when a lot of times if we just simplify things, and I think that's why I love using nature so much, is just to keep things simple and to really follow their lead and see what they gravitate towards, because a lot of times it is those just simple basic things that we would think, oh, that's like, that's not going to be enough. Like, I think I need to do more, but you don't need to do more. Like, you can create the simplest, there's so much that you can add to this simplest little activity. And I think that's my biggest piece of advice that I always tell parents, is just to really keep it simple.
That's perfect.
I love it.
Yep. Before we let you go, do you have any questions for us?
I think I would love to know more about, so you guys, you're more clinic based because you're in Boise, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were both in a pediatric outpatient clinic. Yes. But now more, I want to be in a nature-based clinic.
Gosh, it sounds so much fun.
I don't know if we'd be able to do it year round.
I know.
It could be really cold.
There actually is, an outdoor OT right in Boise.
I follow her on Instagram, I think.
Yeah, Danielle Fallon. Yeah.
Yeah. What? Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
Why haven't we?
We're going to have to.
Gone and announce her.
I know. We're going to have to chat with her next.
Yeah.
What in the world?
Yeah. So she's here. Yes. And you know, I think a big thing about what we try to do as nature-based OT is try to get out in all weather. Obviously, I'm lucky where I am. It's very mild.
Yeah.
So, and I do still have to work on, you know, I do a lot with weather and kids and getting out in all weather. But I obviously do not have the conditions at all to what you guys have.
Well, I'm just thinking, let's just, you know, it's just a couple of times out of the year where it's like over 100 degrees, where like you could be outside for a short amount of time in the shade and work on that interoception piece of knowing that you're too hot. So you need to go take a break inside
or go to the river
vice versa. When it's so cold, you can bundle up and be out there for like 10 minutes, but then you notice that your lips are turning blue, so you need to go inside. You know, that would be great, actually.
Yes. So lots of options.
I actually have a whole thing that I do with kids about weather, because, you know, so many of the kids that we see who have sensory sensitivities, they have trouble with weather. So.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. Yes. This, I could honestly pick your brain and chat with you all day. It's been so fun.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I love being on. You guys have an awesome podcast. I love listening to it.
Oh, this was such a good conversation. Thank you so much. So our next business venture is going to be a nature-based clinic. So stay tuned.
Oh my gosh.
Coming soon.
Yes, we have. I feel like every time we have a podcast interview, a guest, we have all these new ideas of things that we want to do. And it's just so incredible, this OT field and what you can accomplish and what you can do with your degree. I mean, there's literally so many ways that you can help people thrive.
This is true.
I love it. It's so motivating. Hopefully y'all think it's as motivating and exciting as we do.
Yeah. So go chat with Kristen over on Coastal Connections OT on social media and check out her website, right?
Yep.
She has the website.
Yep.
Let her know that you listened to the podcast and that it was amazing.
Yes.
Let us know as well.
Yep. Yep.
Yep.
Do all the things. Leave us a review on iTunes if you're listening to the podcast, if you're watching us on YouTube.
Wait, we're on YouTube?
What? We are. Yes, you can see us. You can see the behind the scenes, the setup.
Holy moly.
But if you are watching on YouTube, make sure you like, comment, subscribe, all those things. The more that you interact with our content, the better we can serve our community. We can reach more people. And we love it.
Yeah, and share with your friends and family. Tell people about.
Or coworkers.
Which
are probably your friends, most likely.
I mean, sometimes.
Because you're not going to share a podcast or a YouTube video with a coworker that isn't your friend.
Probably not.
No.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Okay.
We got to go.
We will see you. We will chat with you next week.
Okay, bye.
Thank you so much for listening to All Things Sensory by Harkla.
If you want more information on anything mentioned in the show, head over to harkla.co/podcast to get the show notes.
If you have any follow-up questions, the best place to ask those is in the comments on the show notes or message us on our Instagram account, which is @harkla_family or @allthingssensorypodcast. If you just search Harkla, you'll find us there.
Like we mentioned before, our podcast listeners get 10% off their first order at Harkla. Whether it's for one of our digital courses or one of our sensory swings, the discount code SENSORY will get you 10% off. That's SENSORY.
Head to harkla.co/sensory to use that discount code right now.
We're so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world. While we make every effort to share correct information, we're still learning.
We will double check all of our facts, but realize that medicine is a constantly changing science and art.
One doctor or therapist may have a different way of doing things from another.
We are simply presenting our views and opinions on how to address common sensory challenges, health-related difficulties, and what we have found to be beneficial that will be as evidence-based as possible.
By listening to this podcast, you agree not to use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or your child.
Consult your child's pediatrician or therapist for any medical issues that he or she may be having.
This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast.
Thanks so much for listening.